You're listening to the Hashtag STR podcast. This is Amy Hall, and with me is Greg Kokel.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Greg. Are you ready for some questions?
Well, we're jumping right in, aren't we? No banter, no jokes, no gee.
Do you have a joke? Yeah, neither do I.
No, okay.
Let's get to the questions. Okay. The first one comes from Beth's Apologetics blog, and she says, I've been told that is a fetus human and is a fetus a person aren't the right questions. They admit that it's human. They say that what makes abortion okay is that a fetus isn't sentient. How would you respond?
Well, the question I'd ask is, why does that matter? Why is it that sentience is what gives a human being his or her value? I mean, that's the question. There are two ways to approach this. I mean, in a certain sense, it's very simple. There are two ways to approach it. One of them is that human beings have intrinsic value. That means the value that humans have, and by the way, I have a whole chapter on this in The Story of Reality titled Beautiful, and I labor to make the point that what makes a human valuable, every person reading the book, every person listening to our voice, are valuable, not because of something on the outside of them, what they look like, not something on the inside of them, the nice person they are. Oh, you're such a beautiful person. That's not what I'm talking about. Not something they can do, like play chess or play sports or read books really well or be sentient. These are all examples of qualities that an individual human being might have. The minute you make value tied to that quality, any human without the quality you've identified as being the decisive quality is disposable, completely disposable, okay? So actually I've made my point that indirectly I started out by saying there's two things that make a person valuable, either something intrinsic or something extrinsic, something built into the warp and woof of the human. It is tied to being human. That's why we call our rights human rights, because of the rights that accrue to human beings in virtue of being human. And if they're human rights, then every human has them if they're intrinsic. Now, if they're not intrinsic, but if they are in virtue of something else, that's extrinsic or instrumental, all right? So they're either built in or not. Now, here's the problem. If they're not built in, then somebody says, oh, they have rights because they're sentient. And I respond, really? Says who? You? Your grandma? I think they have rights because they have white skin. That was an argument. That was the argument regarding slavery. I think they have rights because they have a certain level of intelligence. That's the argument for killing retarded children. I don't know if that's the politically correct term anymore, but children with mental disabilities that Hitler used, the Third Reich, and it's being used now in places like Iceland and even in the States with regards to Down's children, you know. The minute you do that, you are creating a human standard that allows you to separate disqualify certain members of the human family from being bona fide members of the human community. They did that with Dred Scott. They've done it with ethnic cleansing. They did it in the Third Reich, and they're doing it with abortion. Okay, so what is it that grounds human rights? It isn't sentience, because sentience isn't unique to humans. There's all kinds of sentient creatures, and so this is the liability. If the person wants to go in that direction, then what they are saying is human beings have no value in themselves. What is valuable is sentience. That's what we're calling valuable at the moment.
Right.
Because we're more enlightened now than calling skin color the thing that makes us valuable. But why sentience rather than skin color? Why not any other quality? You're just making it up. You see, our culture was grounded, Western civilization was grounded in the notion that human beings qua human, in virtue of being human, not in virtue of any other quality they had, were valuable. Why? Because they were made in the image of God. Their souls, their invisible selves, bore God's mark, so that no matter where they were in the developmental scale, no matter what capability they had, they still were valuable. I visited Melinda Penner this morning and talked with her for a half hour, prayed with her, read the Bible to her. I had no clear sense that she was understanding what I was saying. Most of the time, she wasn't even looking at me. Is she valuable? Yes, but not because of anything she can do, because right now she can't do anything. That's the Christian understanding.
I've heard people say before that, and this is, seems just as ad hoc, that someone say Melinda...
Ad hoc meaning just kind of like you make it, it's yeah. For this is what it means. It's like, yeah, doesn't follow a particular rule or pattern.
Right, they're
it's
not just, being consistent.
You're making it up as you go along kind of thing.
So they would say that since Melinda at one point was self-aware, then she's still valuable now. But again, that's... With a fetal human being, they will be self-aware at some point. It's just not right now. So what is the difference between those two?
Well, the more I think it's a fair question. And to me, the more foundational issue is, says who?
Yeah.
So what you're doing is people are making up an instrumental, functional criterion for value. Any criterion they make up, they can change. If it's up to us to decide. And this, I'm telling you, history is strewn with this wreckage. And the distinction here, by the way, is what's being made is the distinction between being human and being a person. Now, I know that person was mentioned in there in the conversation or in the question, but this is precisely what's going on. You are a person if you function a certain way, or if you have sentience, or if you have hope for the future, or if you have these capabilities, or something like that. Down syndrome kids have sentience, right? You know, and so and by the way, even preborn children have sentience. They have awareness. So any make-me-up is going to be the kind of thing that can be changed when it's convenient, and this is what always happens.
And it always amazes me that
that's what you mean by being ad hoc, by the way.
Yeah. The people making arguments like this, they always assume that they're going to be on the right side of the line.
Yeah, that's right.
They're safe.
That's right. That's
but
well put.
If the people in power have the right to decide who's human, who is human, then... how do you know you're always going to be on the right side of that line?
You know, a good example of this is when you have the LGBT crowd, for example, which is strongly pro-abortion, which there's no relationship between the two things. But they seem to, when pro-lifers would go out to demonstrate or whatever, you know, then this would be part of the crowd that would show up against them. Until the idea of genetically testing children before they're born to find out if they're gay so you can abort them came up on the radar. Oh, then that's different. Then it's their ox being gored. So the question here is, what is the principle involved? Our principle is inclusive in virtue of what human beings are. Human beings are valuable in themselves regardless of any other factor, even if they are gay, even if they are disabled in some fashion. Even if they are immoral in some fashion, even if they're small, even if they're large, even if they're sentient, even if they're not sentient, doesn't matter. Human beings, qua human, in virtue of being a human, have intrinsic value, and that is the only standard that protects us. Mm-hmm. Any other standard is going to eventually turn against people, and we see this happening today even.
Yeah. Okay, next question comes from our friend in Australia, Ebony Dunstan. And she asks, do all Christians today have a spiritual gift, as it says in 1 Corinthians 12? How would I counter the view that we all have the authority to heal?
Well, if it says it in 1 Corinthians 12 that we all have a spiritual gift, in virtue of the authority of Scripture, then then the fact is we do have a spiritual gift. But we don't have every spiritual gift. In fact, 1 Corinthians 12 and Romans 12, these make the point that different people have different gifts. And the illustration given in 1 Corinthians 12 is the illustration of a body. And Paul says explicitly, we're not all ears, are we? We're not all eyes, are we? We're not all hands, are we? But the Spirit distributes gifts according to his will for the good of the larger body. I don't know why any further argument than the straightforward testimony of Paul there in 1 Corinthians 12 is needed to rebut the claim that we can all be healers. We don't. Paul says we don't all have those. The Spirit gives gifts as he wants. Not everybody gets every gift, but we each get something that will allow us to contribute to the body in a meaningful way. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
1 minute and 23 seconds. All right.
Well, it's hard to argue with Paul, I think.
That's right. That's what I say.
Okay, next question comes from Kristen Fulton. She asks, how do you decide what books, media, movies, TV shows, etc. to allow your children to interact with? How does that change over time? So,
I don't even know. I'm just trying to think of how I'd articulate my own standards, which are kind of in flux in a certain sense, because it isn't like I've got this hard set. Some people say, well, I never let our kids watch R-rated movies. Well, it depends why they're R-rated. You know, I wonder, and it all depends on how old their kids are. But and sometimes my daughters will say, well, this show is okay, Papa, because it didn't have any bad words. And that's the standard a lot of Christians use. I frankly don't care about the bad words so much. My girls get offended by it a little bit, and I'm glad they are. And I apologize to them sometimes when that happens in a movie we're watching. But I'm more troubled by the bad ideas, which they are not able to see, okay? And so this is the more thoroughgoing principle that I have on any of these things. What is the message being preached to my daughters through this medium, whatever it happens to be? Is the message a godly message? Is it a message that's consistent with reality, or is it a message that's inconsistent with reality? I remember, people have to go back a ways to think of this, but the movie Camelot, which came out in the late 60s, I love that movie. Now, Camelot has a theme, an adultery theme, and it's a significant part of the book. But what it does is it shows how destructive adultery is. So it's, even though it's got a sin at the central focus of the development of the story, what is communicated is how destructive that sin turns out to be in the lives of individual people and in the broader designs of goodness. That adulterous relationship destroyed the round table, according to that story. And so there was a message that it was a salutary message, as opposed to other things that I see. And this is where it troubles me. A lot of these sitcoms, even, you know, seemingly innocuous things, Hallmark, whatever, that there's subtler messages that are being communicated about male and female roles, for example. I don't want my girls to watch commercials, you know. So we had the Super Bowl, we DVR'd it, we fast forward the commercials, okay? And why? Because you know what? The men always look like idiots in all the commercials. I mean, by and large, it's the guys who look like idiots. And why is that? Well, there's something going on there, you know, and it's the kids that always seem like the smart guys. I don't want my children thinking that they're smarter than me, that they know better than me. But that's a message that comes across there. So there's an example of me being aware of a message and trying to do something to protect my children from that message. Now, as time goes on, they're going to be watching more of those as adults, and hopefully they will have internalized the values and ideas that I have as a follower of Christ and that they are adopting as Christians themselves that will allow them to assess what they're watching. But I think that needs to be taught, where that needs to be encouraged.
As you're watching, do you comment on it? Do you analyze what they're seeing?
Sometimes
we do. Afterwards, do you?
Right. This is what's great about DVR, the pause button, and that kind of stuff. You can just stop it and say, "Wait a minute."
Do they get annoyed?
Yeah, they get annoyed because I stop the stuff a lot. But it's not always just for instructional moments, but it's for other reasons because I want to say, hey, that was cool. Let me see that scene again. The bad guy gets it really bad there. He gets his comeuppance. So, I try to take opportunity to explain things to my girls. Mm-hmm. The reading is harder. My daughter reads very fast, blindingly fast.
I'm so jealous of her. That's an amazing skill.
I bought her the Space Trilogy, C.S. Lewis Space Trilogy, and 24 hours later, she was finished with it.
And that's not reading for 24 hours. No.
I mean, just within a day, I'm done with that. Now, I know she's going to be reading again because a lot of the stuff she reads over and over again. She's worn out my Chronicles of Narnia. The pages are literally falling out. I had to buy her own set. So I don't mind her wearing that stuff out. But the point I'm making, though, is when I have to look at a book, okay, I got to assess this book. I don't know how to assess it. She's got it read before I got a couple of pages through it. So it's more difficult in that situation. And it's better to go by recommendations of other people. Mm-hmm. And you could do the same with movies. Folks in the Family has a great service for assessing movies. And they'll give you the whole breakdown and give you the alerts and everything that's going on there and the ideas. So that makes it easier, something like that. Books is more difficult.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think we can squeeze one more in here.
All right, last one.
This one comes from Barry Wallace. His question is, who did Cain marry?
Oh, this is easy. Cain married his sister. I know it's really gross, but there
could have been his niece.
Niece or something like that. Let's put it this way, a close relative. And the reason is there weren't many other choices at that point. I know it's kind of like, that sounds gross, but that's just the way it was. I thought you're not supposed to do that. Well, now you're not supposed to do that for a number of reasons that didn't apply then. You know, actually, I heard Dennis Prager, who we both listened to, made a comment about this Jewish intellectual who high view of the Bible, etc. So he's reflecting. He thinks that the restrictions of having sex or marriage with close family members is not so much because of health reasons, although there can be over time a problem there. We know this from, you know, Russian czars and all this, you know, but. He thinks it's so that children are protected from sex, that they are guarded and protected mm-hmm. from having their lives sexualized the way the culture is trying to do so now, which is, by the way, another good principle. I want that garden gate to be closed, to draw on imagery from the Song of Solomon, as long as possible. I don't want it to be open before its time. And unfortunately, the secular culture in general has no sensitivity to that at all. So Cain pretty much had to choose from what was available, and there wasn't much there.
But I can imagine if they were living as long as the Bible says, that they wouldn't necessarily be like, it wouldn't be like growing up with your sister who's 2 years younger than you. I mean, they could have had many children before any of them got married.
Right, right.
So
that certainly is possible.
There's that.
So it'd be like he didn't know she was his sister.
Well, he would know, but he wouldn't. I mean, it wouldn't be that.
Yeah.
Like I played ball with you growing up or something.
Yeah, something. It just was different. In any event, the simple answer is the true answer. And mm-hmm. even though it sounds to our sensibilities a little bit gross, it weren't any other choices. That's mm-hmm. what it amounts to. All right.
Well, that's it for today, Greg.
Yeah, we covered 2 minutes and 24 seconds there.
Thank you all for listening. Again, send us your questions on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. We look forward to hearing from you. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.